It is actually 5 o'clock. That clock is in a different time warp. So 5 o'clock, and we're going to start a study session on the budget. And I think that's going to be our new finance director and our city administrator, tag-teaming, perhaps.
Actually, I can just briefly start off. Yeah, this is part of the transition over to the Sarah kind of doing the finance kind of stuff. She is coming into this a little late in the process, but it's certainly similar to what she had done up in Linden. So you're going to be hearing less and less from me, which is, of course, not a bad thing. I think I'll just go.
No.
When I was young, and so more from Sarah. If anything, let me just start off. What we hope to do tonight is just introduce you to all of the decision cards. We're really not going to be asking you to say, this one's good, this one's not as good, this one's terrible, whatever it is might be.
But we can, right?
We'll have plenty of time for that. So what we really want to give you a feel for is the universe of decisions that you'll be making. So you can, at your leisure, compare and contrast.
In a perfect world.
How we might be able to spend monies. Starting at our next study session, we hope to be able to bring out the preliminary general fund budget so you'll be able to see how much revenue we have possibly to think about most of these decisions, because most of them reside in the general fund. And if there is really much money left over to really consider some of these things. But tonight, what we want to do is just introduce them. We've grouped them. There's one sheet here for revenue and then a three-pager that has all of the expenditure decision cards. They're pretty much organized by the departments that have proposed them. So we'll start off with administrative services, which Riley will head up and just kind of quickly go through them, move over to the clerk's department, community development, police, and then finally public works. And not surprisingly, public works has more than the others, but what makes those a little different is that even though most of the other ones from the administrative services, clerk, and community development are within the general fund, so we'll need to be looking at those revenues, the public works sometimes move over into the water, sewer, storm, but of course when we talk about parks and streets, we really are talking about the same precious general fund revenues. So with that said, I'll quickly go through the revenue side, and again, don't have to say whether you love them or hate them. I just wanted to kind of run through them before we jump into the expenditure side. On the one-page decision card index for revenues, I've broken down the bank property tax into two categories, and that is, if you remember last year before we joined the fire district, we had our bank capacity. Since we've joined the fire district, we've now gotten back, or we now have a lot of bank capacity that we didn't have before. So I wanted to kind of break those into two little compartments, only because one is pre-fire district and the other one is post-fire district, if that makes any difference. So on this sheet, we have about 5.73% of pre-fire district annexation revenue. Each 1% is now worth about $10,000. Last year, it's worth about double that because of our the valuation of our property tax. We cut our property tax levy in half, so each 1% value is then cut now. So we have about almost $57,000 of old bank capacity that you can simply take through a vote of the council. That money would come in year after year after year. And then down below, the following the annexation, there's the 1% property tax increase, and we have about $1.4 million there because that's what we cut our levy down by. The other two revenue decision cards you've seen before, one is business licenses. Right now we charge a flat rate for our industrial companies of $287, and the idea would be to change that to a head count, so $50 per employee with a $300 minimum, and you can see how much that would bring in approximately. And then the utility tax. We did a lot of work last couple of years on our utility tax. But right now, if we were to increase it by 0.5%, we get about $40,000, and that money goes into the current expense fund. So all of these are current expense fund revenues, be it our old bank capacity, our new, or if we change our business license form, or if we increase our water, sewer, storm, utility tax.
the business license, industrial customer, you're saying $50 per employee?
Right.
If you have 200 employees, that's $10,000.
Right. Yeah.
That's a big increase.
Yeah, I don't think we have anyone that big.
Yeah, we do. Cascade Dapo is about that big.
Really? Okay. Because right now, the $20,000 is what I pulled off of Mark's. I'll need to go back because maybe $50 was a typo. Maybe it's $5 or something. But
yeah, it seems like an awful lot, especially to our bigger employers.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. With those sort of numbers, I agree. So let me research that and I'll get back to you.
Even somebody like Ace that may have, 15 employees, that's a big chunk of change compared to what they're paying now.
Yeah.
And you're talking about a small business there, but I don't know if that would fall under that as an industrial company.
Yeah, it does. And this would just be, because we do, and that goes back to the fact that one of the conversations we're having on economic development is, made in Ferndale, we make things here. Well, maybe your point would be that just because we make things here doesn't mean that we should sit in Mount. Point taken.
I'm confused by the two different property taxes. So just overall, how much do we have, percentage-wise? Do we have 9.9 or 10-point-something? How much percent do we have, including the bank capacity we used to have plus?
Altogether,
mm-hmm.
We have 145, we have a lot. Because we cut our property tax levy back by so much.
Well, we can't raise people's property taxes 140%. Is that what you're
saying? No, not at all. It may take, we probably will never pull.
When you say you can't, are you saying you can't as a moral question or as a legal question?
As a mathematical question.
I think mathematically, he's saying you could. Whether we ought to, I think, is that.
Exactly. I'm not advocating for us. All of a sudden, moving
really?
our property tax levy back.
So maybe part of the confusion might be something I asked Greg to do is the first number you have there is council members may wish to consider if we were under the old plan, the old system, we had not used property tax increases over another year. So if we were under the old way, where would it be today?
Yeah.
And we have $56,000 of capacity
exactly.
Under the old rules that we're not under. But if you thought you, in a moral sense, were under the old rules, that's what we would be today if we saw the fire district.
But the number we need to focus on is following annexation, that number.
And we have both. I want to do, for the reasons the mayor said, realize that there might have been an understanding from our citizens that because we'd agreed to reduce our property tax levy to an amount equating, not actually equal to, but pretty close to what the new fire district levy will be to them directly, then in some ways I think in that conversation about whether we should join the fire district, I believe that we insinuated, if not said, that vote for the fire district annexation. Yes, you're going to get taxes, you're going to get taxed directly from the fire district, but in at least the first year, we're going to reduce our property tax ask so that your tax bill doesn't change.
I think we actually did say that.
Right.
Though,
so if that's the case, then the following annexation property tax increase we should not really touch. But if you are considering taking more than our statutory 1%, taking our bank capacity that we had before the annexation to the fire district, it has nothing to do with the people joining the fire district or not joining the fire district, then what we have is a little under $57,000 available to us, should you wish to take it. If you don't wish to take the $56,000, and that would be a 5.73 bank capacity, it will stay there. It doesn't go away. That's why it's banked. It's there forever.
I'm just going to go home and think about it, because you're still confusing me, because you say it's $9,900 for each 1%, and then, okay.
Right.
So five times, okay. Basically, if we wanted to, we could really, if we took 1% this year, we'd have 139.88% of bank capacity.
Well, we get another percent next year. So
we
have, but it is an odd thing. It is.
I'm still trying to wrap my, because I didn't realize this was going to happen when we switched over. I just thought it would be,
I don't think we did either.
We did not either. It wasn't until the assessor sent mark at that point, a revised bank capacity worksheet that they do every year. And he was surprised at that point that we indeed did not.
I didn't believe it. I thought RSL Mark was dead on, so I went to AWC and attended the finance, the property tax, and I started my question. I got three words into my question, and I said, yes, you had the bank capacity. Because she knew exactly what the question was based on other jurisdictions. And, in fact, some jurisdictions are separating themselves from their fire. They're joining the fire district, leaving the fire district as a customer in order to get more bank capacity.
Yeah.
Do we know, I apologize, yes. Do we know how much the 1% would cost somebody on average? Like, because we usually had
$2 a year.
Yeah, it would help if you could give me like a number, so I would.
Right, we can
work. If you have a $300,000 house, how much per year? So then we can think levels of pain.
I think it's $2 a year.
Right, and
less than the EMS.
Probably more information than you need. But a few years ago, we did this. It turns out there's a thing called the implicit price deflator, which is the opposite of what inflation is. It doesn't. It's a Bureau of Statistics mathematical calculation. Anyway, it can go negative. And when it goes negative, you remember a few years ago we wanted to take our 1%, but to do that we had to pass an extra resolution stating financial need. So this year, if you just want to take your statutory 1%, we'll have to have the resolution of financial need because the implicit price deflator is less than zero. And then we would have the regular resolution on property tax telling the assessor that we want to get 1% more in revenue next year than we got this year, which is $9,937. So later on, when we in the next few meetings, when we eventually get to our property tax levy decision, there'll be two resolutions should you want to take your 1%, not one. Again, probably more information than you need, but that doesn't stop me in the past. So.
Any more revenue questions? Councilmember Goodrich.
As we look at these decision cards, two things pop into my mind. Is one is, what's our proposed or anything increases for next year as far as revenue increases? I know the economy is only growing at 1.4% or something like that. I know Mark was robust in his thoughts in the past. Are we going to have any surprises like we did last year? Because it meant at the first of the year, all of a sudden, all this magic money appeared, and we were buying dump trucks and things and stuff because money magically appeared.
Right.
That wasn't in the budget discussions.
Yeah. To start from the back and work forward, I anticipate ending 2016 with more revenue than we had budgeted. That is probably due in more than anything else to Mark's extremely conservative budgeting philosophy on revenues. We've never gotten less revenue than we've ever budgeted. He's always been very conservative because while you can cut back on expenses, if you don't have the revenue, you can't do anything about it. So his philosophy was very conservative on revenues, and it's better to be happily surprised later than it is to be unhappily disappointed. So based on that philosophy, last year, we actually ended up with $400,000 more than what we had budgeted. I anticipate maybe not to that extent, but I do anticipate this year we will end up with more revenue than we anticipated. A good thing again. Now the question is: is the very conservative budgeting of revenue an appropriate or the way that you want to do a budget? Is it better to be accurate at the risk of underestimating, or is it better to be overly conservative with a much greater chance of kind of having revenues come in? It's a philosophical discussion. But we take for this year, next meeting we'll be going through the revenues and expenditures preliminarily in the general fund. We've looked at 2016 and have made some estimations for what we think we're going to get by the end of the year. And I think at least those August numbers we provided to you last meeting. CERC has been working on refining those to be sure that we're good. But now if we come back with what might be considered a more realistic estimation of revenues, the other side of that coin is we will be recommending that we do not budget spending at all, that we actually budget for a revenue surplus for the same reason. it's better to have extra money at the end of the year than not enough. So it's kind of a tomato-tomato. You underestimate revenues and you're happily surprised, or you realistically estimate revenues, but you're very conservative on the expenditures with anticipation of getting more revenue than expenditures. Both work out the same way at the end of the day. It's just a question of the comfort level you have. But what we don't want to do is really be optimistic or extremely accurate to the extent we can be on revenues and then plan on spending it all, because we will spend it all. I mean, that's just your household budget. I mean, I found $20 in the back of a drawer, and I go, woo! Well, I've never found, you know, a bill back there that I didn't pay, because you got to pay your bills. So anyway, long story short, that's the reason why we had the surpluses in the prior years, and going forward, we can continue to do that, or we can change it to more tight budgeting. But with that, I would also really, really want to have a budgeted surplus every year.
So, Council, we're talking about revenues now. Any more questions of staff? What I noticed was not on here, which is fine, is solid waste is always...
Solid waste is right now 13.5, and it's scheduled to go to 14.5 next year. That's already in ordinance. We could do more, but that's why it's probably not on here, is that I think in many ways we've gone to the well, and there's still water in it, but let's you know, not get crazy or too thirsty.
Councilman Watson.
Are we going to consider... fees for, you know, hooking up the water in the sewer? Because we've talked about having the new people pay for the wastewater treatment
right.
plan.
Yeah, in many ways, because we will have, there's two things, water and sewer. With the water, we will be embarking, and you've started to see that, on a program of expanding our well fields. That's going to cost money. On the sewer side, as you all know, we're in the process of expanding our sewer plant. So in the design for the sewer plant is scheduled to be done in 2017. And then in 2018, we start getting permits and contractors, and then 18, 19, whatever, we actually build the plant. So 2017 is going to be the year of design and also the year of looking forward to answer that very question. How much can we afford to bond for our sewage treatment plant? What sort of grants can we find? What sort of low-interest loans can we find? And once we get further down the design road, we'll have better cost estimates, which will be able to be a little more exact on what our bonding capacity is and how much more we can find through grants and loans, which then leads to, I think, where you were getting at, what do we do with connection fees? What do we do with water sewer rates in order to afford the expanded well fields and afford the expanded wastewater treatment plant?
Well, why do we have to wait? Because we know it's going to cost a certain amount
right.
of money, so we're going to be missing all the connection fees for 2017 and part of 2018.
I don't plan on waiting till the end of the year to do that. It's just something that we need to start doing, and I didn't want to throw another.
Yeah, I think today's kind of general fund, and raising the cook-up fees doesn't help the general fund. They're important.
This is just general fund.
Yeah, exactly.
This is general fund, and that wouldn't help the general fund.
I could see us, after budget is settled, very early in 2017, Circa starting to work with Kevin on coming back with some scenarios. We're also currently looking for grants and loans through the Department of Ecology and others. We'll be able to have a little better idea. But that is going to be a very, very important conversation.
Okay. More questions on revenues? He's ready to go to decision cards. This is kind of an overview, right?
Just an overview. And what we'll have is, they're grouped by department who's proposing it. So we'd like to have them get up and explain it to you. Again, if we can limit debate as to whether it's good or bad or indifferent, I would like to get through them all. And that's the problem with starting to weigh, geez, why are we spending here? If anything, just bear with us so you can at least get an idea of what's being asked, the rationale for it, if there's a way to pay for it, and then later on we can have that qualitative discussion about do we do number 5 and number 8 and, you know, number 6 is crazy, but the other ones are all great, or whatever it might be. So my hope tonight is that we just kind of get through them. If we still have some time left over, to the extent you want to, we could actually then start discussing some of them in more detail. So start off with Riley's going to run. There was 3 that came from what's generally called administrative services. And so if you want to get up, then we'll kind of just run through them and see if you have any conceptual questions.
Hello, Council. Riley Sweeney, Communications Officer. First card that you see in front of you is a website upgrade. So this would be focused not just on a fresh coat of paint, but on some basic functionality needs for our website, specifically our search. Who searched something on the city website and been unable to find it? Okay. Top of the list for fixing. So it'd be reorganizing the content we do have there. We maintain over 277 pages of information, not even counting links externally. That's a lot of info, and we can do a better job of making it flow. So this would mainly be an investment of my time. The cost associated with it would be if we need to do any HTML coding that is beyond my abilities, we could contract that out. And so I wanted to have a decision from the council saying that this is worth my time and energy and also a little money if we need to.
Well, before we get too far, I also want to say up in the right-hand corner of each one of the decision cards is a number that's penciled in. That number corresponds to the three-page spreadsheet. So you can, if we're on number 17, you can be sure that you have sheet 17.
Any questions about number one?
Yeah. Any reason why we can't do that this year? I mean, because our website is used a lot. Is this something that could be incorporated into this year? I mean, we're not talking about a whole lot of money here.
It's mainly my time. So
I don't have enough time left in the year.
Yeah. if I get a definitive nod from council, I will begin the process as soon as I have that.
So the $1,500 that you're asking for does not include your time.
Does not include my time.
That is like changes to the architecture and that kind of stuff.
Right, right.
It would help if you could tell us, for everybody, how you came up with your number. I'm just wondering how, because $1,500 doesn't seem like very much to do a major upgrade to the.
It's not. I got a couple of price quotes from contractors that I know that do some HTML. I anticipated I wouldn't need more than 5 to 10 hours of additional work because I kind of talked to them a little bit about it informally, but it was a very speculative.
So this is literally coding? This isn't a new package that you open up?
Yeah, no. So what it would be is, for instance, we decide that we need a new plugin for our search feature, but it doesn't quite mesh with the WordPress theme that we have, and we need somebody to do the connective tissue. Mm-hmm. So it'd be that.
Ronnie, what if we paid to have you trained in HTML? I don't know.
I can HTML. I have done some of the coding on the website. It's an opportunity cost. So I could spend a bunch more time getting all trained up, but I wouldn't be able to do the other things.
Okay, thank you. Training itself would cost probably close to $1,000 anyways.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And you still wouldn't know. You still wouldn't know DBase or anything.
Right, stuff, so. Right. So. It would be more efficient in this case to pay somebody.
Thank you. Fire chief. Keep moving.
All right. Number two, video. We live in the world of video. They say video is the new press release. This would provide the equipment and software for us to begin producing videos in-house. So this would be a benefit to our other departments where we could tell the good stories about our capital projects that we're doing. It could also help explain when we've got a complex issue that's boiling over at the city. We can talk people through traffic lights or things like that in short little bursts, 1 to 2 minutes. So the cost covers the equipment necessary, the software. There'd be the ongoing cost of the software license. But you have the benefit of having a fully trained videographer on staff, and it'd be nice to have a camera.
So you're familiar with using software for editing?
I was a television producer for 2 years and a web video guy for a year. So
it didn't seem like much for a camera.
It's not. It's actually the microphone that is worth its weight in gold, because you can take a video with your cell phone, but the sound. So we want that clear, Christine. I just wanted to make sure that was on tape.
And thank you.
Okay. Any other questions about that?
We've got 26 of them, so we're going to cut about a minute each. We'll make it.
This one I just want to say. This one is actually in the budget as a placeholder. It was there last year, so Mark just rolled it over. So this 14550 is actually in the budget. So if you decided not to do it, it would come out.
This is the nonprofits, correct?
This, yes. Right. This is the only one that's actually in the budget in any way.
Teen court, domestic violence, senior center, food bank.
Food bank.
One more, I think.
Just those four.
Okay.
Those four. Fair enough. Yeah. So we provide these organizational grants, or at least we have in years past. We did a call for applications. The same four groups that got them last time turned in their materials after a little pestering. And all their materials were complete. I verified that they fulfilled all the requirements. We have a rather complex application process where they submit various types of materials about their IRS status and their board meeting minutes, and we have all of that. So I verified that their applications were complete and put in a little summary of what they're going to spend the money for.
Very good. Thank you.
All right. The next three are actually from the clerk's department, so we'll have Susan go through them.
Good evening, Council. Susan Duncan, City Clerk. The first one is decision card number 4. To replace the existing monument sign in front of City Hall. I don't know how many of you have walked past that and noticed the crumbling. It just looks terrible. But if you get a really closer look at it, it's rusted, it's warped. It's impossible to get a good message up there that's not sliding all over the place. It's one of these days, lifting up that cover, the whole thing's just going to fall off. It's so rusted up at the top. So there's three different options there. One is not an electronic sign. It's basically exactly what we have now, but just making it nicer so it's not falling apart.
Question on that one.
And then the other two, obviously, are...
Councilor Wilson has a question.
Much more expensive.
We have that one coming out of solid waste. We advertise a lot of things that go on in the city on that.
Mm-hmm.
So we could actually use LTAC funds, just like we did on the last one.
And the sign is, as it is now, is so underutilized because it takes me, you know, 30 minutes at least to go out there and change things, whereas if it was electronic...
Yeah, it's a stupid thing,
yeah.
Right? So we can also put solid waste / LTAC in there?
Absolutely.
Gosh. Number 5 is a request of the Arts Commission to have a budget line item for public art. The Arts Commission was formed to provide public art, and there is no dedicated budget. So anything that the Arts Commission does is they do fundraising for it, they get grants. A big problem with grants is that many of them are matching grants, so we could get a $5,000 grant if we have $5,000 to match with it, and then we have $10,000 to spend on public art. But without the matching funds, there are many of these. We're leaving so much money on the table of these grants that we can't apply for because we don't have the matching funds. And the $13,000 request was just a number that I picked, or I think Councilmember Watson picked, because it was based on roughly $1 per person in the city of Ferndale, which we think is a bargain for public art. Increase the health and wellness committee budget. This was actually on one of our long-term goals for last year's receiving last year's Well City designation, and it's just, you know, this has been since I believe 2008, I think, when the health and wellness committee was formed. Maybe not quite that long ago.
Not that long ago.
But it started out at the $10 per person, which is the minimum that AWC requires. So this is just a request to bump that up a little bit. The health committee does a lot of good things, and it's always nice to have a little, you know, we use it for incentives, for participation, and
John?
Things like that.
That also translates into reductions in insurance and
yes,
stuff,
2%.
Right? Give us a figure how much you've saved with that compared to this.
Well, certainly more than $5 per person.
If you don't know now, I mean later on.
Yeah. I do remember Mark a couple years ago saying, quoting a figure, and I don't remember off the top of my head.
Nor do I. That's why if you can.
Yeah, I think the 2%, is there a variety of things we need to do or just the questionnaire?
Oh, there's a ton.
There's a whole bunch of things.
Yeah, and in fact, this is one of them, like this establishing the long-term goals and providing the budget. Those are all part of the requirement.
Having council take part in things like Walktober?
Yes.
No pressure?
Yes. You get points for that.
Yeah, we'll find out what that is and get back.
Thanks. I mean, it's certainly more than the $900 and whatever dollars for us.
Very good.
Yeah.
Any more
all right.
questions?
Over next ones are community development, and Yori will be going through those.
Good evening, Council. So the first one is electronic permit application, $7,000. What this would do would allow us to invest in some software that allows us to analyze and make marks and notations and changes on the electronic permit submittals. That way we can just immediately email it back to an applicant. They can submit it electronically. We can monitor that kind of progress in the field. A number of other jurisdictions are moving towards that, and it saves a ton of staff time, a ton of money. It's also what all of the projects are designed on now. They're designed on computer. They're not designed by hand anymore. So this is something where we will move to this at some point in the future. There's no doubt about it. It's just wanting to move now. There are a couple different software programs, and we might actually be able to buy it this year, depending on what the software is. The next one is electronic file conversion. So a similar idea where if we can get rid of paper, all's the better. For those of you that have actually been into the offices in City Hall, you'll see that we probably miss out on 2 to maybe even 5 workspaces because of the fact that we have physical files in there. A lot of those files we don't need. Exactly. A lot of those files we don't need on a day-to-day basis. We might not even need them year to year, but if there's a file that becomes extremely important once every decade, having it upstairs or having it in the floodplain doesn't really make much sense. So if we can take those files, scan them in, and that's really what the majority of this is staff time or interns and a scanner, put them into a searchable network, then we can find that stuff. We can get rid of the paper files and put them off-site. And then with our network, we can call up all of our files electronically, including out in the field. So,
I thought we paid for this a couple of years ago. When Sam was here, I thought we were going to have somebody do this for us.
That was for the records management, for the Civic Web. This goes a little bit beyond that capacity of that.
Okay.
Do we have to keep how long do we have to keep paper stuff? Is it indefinitely or
no? And in fact, a lot of the files that we would be keeping are files that we could get rid of. Not all of them, but some of them, where we could accelerate by scanning. The reason why we wouldn't be getting rid of all of them is because I'm a pack rat, and then also because sometimes there are files that come up where there's a lot of valuable information, even though we could have gotten rid of it. For instance, Pioneer Plaza. We get a lot of requests on that site still, and having all the Pioneer Plaza information, even though it's been dead for 10 years, has been extremely helpful. But it takes up a lot of space.
That's what I was wondering, is if we could get rid of some of this, or once it's scanned, we still got to keep it.
Yeah, the state actually has a records retention schedule that lists out every sort of record you could possibly create, and then it tells you how long you need to keep it. And Susan's pretty good. In fact, what they do is when we bundle things up, we actually put a little label on the box that says, you know, can be destroyed at this date. So come 2017, you can go up and just start pulling things off the shelf and throw it into the shredder. So, yeah.
Doesn't the state have some sort of record retention deal?
But they have a state archives as well.
We have a lot of things there. Now, the problem with once you send it to archives is you don't have access to it. I mean, you have to go to them if you want
it. It takes a while for them to physically retrieve it and get it back.
So if it's electronic, you can still access it.
Okay.
Next one, wetland mitigation site design. This is one that is more difficult to go into detail on. The basic concept is should the city decide to acquire properties, the former golf course property, or even continue with other properties that we own, the ability for us to use those sites for off-site wetland mitigation for either our projects or possibly for private development to be able to send it there. We included a $20,000 budget that would ideally take us to the point of evaluating the site, coming up with a proposal slash program that could go through Ecology and Army Corps where we could have then a viable project. What this doesn't include, and which we can't know at this point because we don't know what the project is, are the recurring costs to maintain it, the cost of an acre of wetland if to transfer. Depending on the direction that we decided to go, in theory, these in-lieu fee areas, similar to a mitigation bank, are self-supporting eventually, but it does take quite a bit of money to get going until you get enough people that have bought in to make it self-sustaining. So what it would do is it would put an immediate impact or burden on our maintenance crew to maintain that site unless we did hire separately. But that's something that if we're going to go in that direction, we need to spend money to get going.
Okay. And it is somewhat complex to permit and then operate. We can bring you more information about there are successful examples out there, but it is somewhat complex.
The other one is something where, you know, LTAC would be a possible scenario for this too, a wayfinding system. That's where you have signs that help guide you into certain destinations within the city, help guide you into where there's parking, help to create a little bit of a sense of identity for some of our sub areas. If it's easy for us as staff to go and put signs wherever, and that's gotten us to where we are now. So we are not proposing having staff be the exclusive people that do it. There's a number of breadcrumbs out there where there's a scientific basis for doing a wayfinding system. We would anticipate that this $25,000 would fund staff and interns to conceptualize and where these signs would go. It's basically what they would look like using those methods that have already been established, and then contracting with a sign company to actually manufacture them.
Yeah, there's a company that I ran across. It works predominantly on the East Coast and predominantly with bigger cities. But I have two of their reports, and I'll scan them and get them to you. They're sizable, but I think conceptually you'll be able to see the process they go through to think about how do you find your way into the city and how do you have your signage and how do you find your way out of the city. Any of us who've been in a city looking for parking, you see those blue signs with P's and arrows, you're like, ah, that's what I mean. So it's those moments where you all of a sudden realize that, you know, people need to find where parking is, people need to find where certain things, how to get, a lot of people probably don't know how to get to the freeway through Griffintown. So those type of things. But I'll scan those and send them to you. If you want to, you can print them. But again, they're fairly voluminous. But you can kind of look at the thought process that at least this company goes through. And there's others out there that do it as well.
And the way that it can really help frame or create an identity for different areas.
Plus Roger Brooks recommends.
Good deal.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, Roger's not going to pay for it.
No. Chief of Police?
All right, yeah. Now we have three here from the police department. And our distinguished chief will run through them.
Good evening. The first is a speed trailer in the tune of $6,500, I believe. Speed enforcement, as you know, can be sporadic and inconsistent depending on the availability of officers. It's done by scope as well as officers. The trailer provides a sustained and highly effective reminder to motorists 24 hours a day. Studies have shown that drivers will self-regulate their speed if they're reminded of it. so that a trailer such as this is an efficient and cost-effective method of reducing speed and problem areas. Most departments, Bellingham Sheriff's Office, have one. They're not available by grants. We get our radar for individual cars by grants, but we've not been able to secure one of these. The second is about a database that we have access to. The police department has access to some government databases. Council member Olson will know those, like NCIC, the state access. They give us criminal history data, restricted, but there are some private databases. We use one now, NexusLexis, $75 a month, but it's no longer a very reliable or a valuable source because it's not being updated. Other departments, Whatcom County, certainly Bellingham, use another one. It's called Clear for Law Enforcement. The cost is more expensive. What that database provides us are information of interest to investigators, such as residents, numbers, phone numbers, employers, relatives, associates, vehicles. It mines this data, collates it, and provides link analysis based on public information. It is a highly useful tool and very valuable to us. The third is something that I think is important. It's a way of humanizing the police department. The police department is often a cold, uninviting, and forbidding place for anyone, adults and young people as well. We'd like to be able to humanize that through pictures, both the art that we provide, that students provide us, as well as pictures depicting our healthy and helpful interactions with our citizens. It not only provides a more homey and inviting appearance, but it does provide a subliminal message of our community involvement, and it's important when the young people tour that facility to understand the relationships, positive relationships that we have with all of our citizens.
Questions of the chief?
All right. I think the public works director will go through the next few.
The lion's share of the entire list.
Yeah, exactly.
It's only half mil.
So, starting out with number 14, we have a street sweeper, the current street sweeper that the public works department utilizes. This is a 2007 model, was purchased as a demo at that time. Street sweeper gets regular use within the city and is going to be about a $270,000 expenditure. That's through the state contract, which most of these vehicle purchases we purchase off state bid list for the procurement. Moving on, number 15, we have a replacement for the 1999 Dodge 3/4-ton pickup that's utilized by the street crew. And these next few, I'm going to go through the 99 Dodge and then the number 16, again, a 99 Dodge 4x4 pickup utilized by the street crew. And then we jump down to number 18, replacement for a 2001 Ford Ranger. Are all vehicles that are utilized by the street crew. The Ford Ranger's used for those people that are going out and doing meter reads, so it gets a lot of short trip usage where they're going from one spot to the next. All of those are kind of at the end of their service life and needing replacement, getting up to the plus 15-year range.
What is the mileage on them, though?
I don't have the mileage, but I could get back to you on that. A lot of them, you know, like that one, the Ford Ranger, it doesn't get as many miles because there's a lot of stop-and-go traffic, so it's kind of one of those that's stopped, thrown into park, and they keep going through transmissions in those. So it ends up being a major replacement expense, but I can get that information coming up.
Well, it's just if we're going to hold one department to replacing their vehicles at mileage, I think it's only fair we do it to the others and see what that is. By comparison.
Okay. Going back up to number 17, the water truck sewer jetter. This is 1976. I think it has about 4 billion miles on it.
probably close.
So This piece of equipment is used for cleaning both our pump stations and the sewer lines. It includes a large water tank and then has a high-capacity pump on it that they run the line down the sewer line, powering it forward and then pulling it back to clean the sewer lines out, to clean clogs out of the line. Very important piece of equipment. The brakes have pretty much failed on this vehicle, and it's one that, if we do take it out of service, we're going to end up using our Vactor truck, which is about four times the cost of replacement for this vehicle. So it'll be putting additional hours onto the Vactor truck, which we don't really have the capacity to support within the department. Decision card number 19 is adding public works utility laborers to the crew, and the line item here on the spreadsheet just shows one. Bo's preference would be to add two utility laborers. Now, currently, the public works crew is comprised of utility workers. The utility laborer classification is a lower job classification than the utility workers, so it's bringing in an entry-level person into the workforce. We're currently looking at our workforce is aging, and we'd like to bring in some entry-level people that we can train, and then they would move, you know, eventually into that utility worker classification. So this would be the lower-end position, looking at getting somebody that would take over the meter reading positions and some of the less skilled items out there, mowing, meter reading, that we could then utilize the utility workers for the higher skill set that they possess.
Yeah, for both parks and public works, we have labor positions, and then we have worker positions. So that's what he was referring to. So, but that classification of laborer and then worker, obviously a little more complicated and more expensive, but that is replicated in the parks department as well as the public works side.
Quick question. I noticed you have this one also being paid for by parks. Are you expecting the utility person to do
the
parks?
The entire public works crew is involved in parks.
Okay.
So the laborer position, we would anticipate that they would be going out and taking over a portion of the mowing duties that the current utility workers are performing. So
okay.
We have a large number of parks hours that are being taken up, that are being staffed by people from the crew. So we would be essentially allowing us to keep the utility workers doing the worker job, the higher skilled positions, than having these people perform those, you know, like lawn mowing activities that we have them doing during the springtime.
Yeah, and that brings up a potential issue, something to think about. Right now, as Kevin said, we use some of our utility workers to do park maintenance work. If we were to augment either the park side or the public work side to give a little bit more of a laborer, to give a lower job classification, time to parks, I wouldn't want folks to think that we are then going to have one or two more people working in parks than we currently do. It'll probably increase the efficiency of our workforce so a utility worker can go do utility worker work and not go do laborer work. So that is something we need to be cognizant of, because adding a person when you have the interplay between public works and parks doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to then get one more FTE in public works or one more FTE in parks. So that's a discussion. That's more of a manpower utilization issue for us. But right now the issue is we're having higher job classifications do what might be considered technically the lower job classification work. So it's just not efficiently using the skill sets of the workforce we have.
Question. Yeah. Then. So this doesn't necessarily mean we're going to better maintain our parks. We'll just make sure they're mowed with lesser trained people. Or I'm just trying to understand.
Again, it's a bigger conversation, but I would not want you to think that that this is going to be a 100% add-on there'll probably be a combination of the two.
Yeah, and to echo what Greg's saying, I don't want to think that, you know, if we add one person to the crew that person's going to be solely devoted to parks without, you know, the person that was fulfilling that park activity is probably going to go do another function at that time that we've been deferring. So there's maintenance activities that are going on within the Public Works Department that we defer at times so that we can do lawn mowing or other activities within the parks, trying to balance that workload for the season of variability for what we have. If we do have more people available, you know, it allows us to better utilize and better fit that function to the classification. But also, if we increase the overall work pool, then it increases the capacity of the organization. But I wouldn't say that, you know, by adding one person, you're going to see one full FTE devoted to the parks department. It'll be an incremental increase to both the parks and to the public works crew. So I think you get benefits on both sides of it, but not on one.
And you're saying you want two positions filled at approximately 70,000 per person?
The request coming from the supervisor in that position was to have two.
That was my error. I didn't actually see the number two. So we'll revise this sheet to include the cost of two. But yes, it's double what's on the spreadsheet.
Right. That didn't seem very much.
Okay, Kevin.
Number 20, the leak detection equipment. Currently, we don't have a leak detector correlator within the Public Works Department. So there is technology available out there that can determine more precisely the location of a water leak within your system. And a lot of times, if you have a water leak within the water system, it becomes readily apparent where it's at because you just blew a big chunk out of the street and there's a large leak and it's easy to identify. But a lot of times we'll have a service line going to someone's house that's a slow leak. It's in a neighborhood where there are a lot of other connections within that area. The pipe bedding within the system is typically in pea gravel, so a leak that locates at the main can migrate a long way before it finds a course to the surface. So leak detection equipment allows us to more precisely locate where that leak is within the system and limits the amount of excavation that we have to do in order to find it. So $24,000, the crew has demoed that equipment and is thinking that it's going to fulfill their needs for that function. Number 21 is a zero-turn mower. The current one that's utilized by the Parks Department is a 2001 vintage mower. This is a piece of equipment that's used to mow all of the parks around town. We currently operate two large mowers. There's one that's a John Deere that you see driving around town. The zero-turn mower is the one that they load up on the trailer and take out to the various parks. I don't have, to go back to the comment on mileage. I don't have an hour count for it, but it is a 16-year-old lawnmower that's been utilized within the Parks Department looking to replace that. Number 22, Public Works Department pickup truck for the water plant. This is another vehicle replacement. This one's dedicated solely to the water plant, and like I said before, I'd come back with mileage figures. And then number 23 is a fifth operator for the water sewer plant, and this would be adding an operator in training at the water and sewer plant. As you know, and as Greg had discussed earlier, we're looking at moving forward with the design for and then the replacement for the sewage treatment facility, and it seemed that bringing that new worker on that's going to be needed at the new facility prior to the construction, having them there and available throughout the construction of that facility is going to be a really big benefit so that they can be involved with the process going forward with that and be trained and ready to go by the time the facility is in operation. And then the final one is the Gator, which is a replacement for the field groomer. Right now, the Parks Department crew has a dedicated field groomer. It's a three-wheeled trike affair that they do that drag the fields and get them ready for the games down at the complex. This would be replacing it with a Gator with attachments to perform the same function, although that piece of equipment will have wider utilization within the Parks Department than just the three-wheeled field groomer, which is a dedicated piece of equipment just to field grooming. The current groomer is at the end of its life, and this, like I said, is replacing it with a Gator that has wider applicability within the rest of the Parks Department.
And just a reminder to Council that all the requests of Public Works, none of them come out of the general fund through current expenses. These are in some way or another covered through water, sewer, and things like that.
Yeah, so. Except for parks. Parks is in the general fund.
Yeah, a little bit there.
So, yeah, water, sewer, storm, all those were outside of.
Any questions of Kevin? Councilmember Watson?
Just real quick. Last year we had a whole bunch of stuff y'all needed to buy, and we did the local you know, we basically borrowed money to do it.
Program.
Is that something that you would like to do again? Because this really adds up to a lot.
It does.
You know, and the interest rates are still fairly low. Is that something you want to think about, or you just want to try and find it in the budget? Because this adds up to a lot of money that you ask for.
It does. And, you know, we've presented kind of a laundry list of equipment. You know, there are a couple of these that are on here that I think are extremely high priority that, you know, should be very seriously considered for replacement. Others that, you know, while they are due for replacement, they should have been replaced, are ones that we can probably kick down the road a little bit. So I think that discussion of the funding source and whether we go forward with loans, I'm really adverse to the credit card type purchase. You know, it's I would prefer to pay for it out of, okay, you know, revenues that we have. That being said, I understand that the complications and challenges that we have.
So, Council, we only have 5 minutes, so I'm going to give Councilmember Saar, I believe you have enough time, and quickly go to Riley. We're going to have like a 3-minute break, so do the best we can.
Yeah, the last two, one is initiated by Councilmember Saar, and the last one is actually from Riley, but it was just a late arrival in the pile. So we've got to sign that.
Councilmember.
I'll talk fast. I won't read the whole long thing that I wrote, but we all know that parks need help. They need some love, and there is no person on staff who has parks as a priority of any kind. So parks always take second position to anything Public Works is doing, as it should, which is why we really should separate them out and create a parks department at this time. My first option is kind of a bare-bones parks department, which would be a new parks director, another labor employee, increasing the existing park maintenance budget from $14,000 to $15,000, and then giving the Parks Recreation Trails Advisory Board $5,000 of a budget to do some projects, that type of thing. My second option would be to create a park supervisor within Public Works, and if we would promote someone, there's currently a parks lead, we could promote them and then hire another park maintenance under that. Again, increasing the maintenance budget to $50,000, and again with a parks board project amount. I think this is going to hopefully be a bigger discussion, so I look forward to that discussion with council.
Thank you, Councilmember. Questions of Councilmember Saar? That was well done.
Thank you, appreciate it.
Mr. Sweeney.
All right, so this,
Communications Officer Riley Sweeney, this came out of some of the discussions we've been having about the mayor meeting with people and supporting meetings that we have with the public. It also came out of discussions with Public Works about some of the public events that we put on, ribbon cuttings, citywide community meetings, Joe Mosher street renaming. Rather than kind of hemming and hawing and figuring out what we can manage on an event-by-event basis, why not have a dedicated fund for this sort of community outreach that we do throughout the year? And that way we know how much we have to spend, we know how much we don't have to spend, and we can budget for it. And so this would be that particular fund.
Thank you. Any questions of staff? Councilmember Watson.
Is this based on what we've spent in previous years?
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you.
Great. Council, go ahead.
Just to say, so next study session, what we hope to do is trot out some preliminary revenues and expenses, at least for the current expense fund, if not the others, and then we can start, in fact, I'm just thinking about this as we are going through this, we may do it through color coding or something else. We probably want to highlight which of these expenditure decision cards are embedded in current expense, so we can kind of focus on those when we talk about current expense. And then we could focus on the water ones when we talk about the water fund and sewer within sewer. So that way you're not, kind of comparing something we could spend in water with something we could spend in current expense.
So, Councilor, at the top of the hour, I still want to give you 5 minutes. So, 6:05, we'll start up again.
Okay.